He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. Where would you like to start?
Oh, I'll start because I had another test drive over at my vacation location from where I did the car show last week. And last week's discussion was about the Lincoln Navigator. This week's discussion will be about a Mini Countryman, which is a four-door, wagon-like, J.C. Cooper Works version, which is a high-performance version, the highest performance version, short of custom engineering adjustments, of the Mini Cooper that one can buy. And J.C. Cooper Works has been out since 2003 or 4, and when they were just two-door Mini Coopers. And it's a twin turbocharged four-cylinder engine. I don't know what the horsepower is. I will tell you that it's quite expensive. The one I drove was 37.5 is apparently the base, or 37.8, what's $300 at that level? Base version of J.C. Cooper Works before you add on technical packages and performance packages and dress-up packages, and this one had $10,000 worth of packages on top of the base. I will say it is a wonderful Mini Cooper, as Mini Coopers have grown into these
How many is the Mini?
It's a four-door. It's like the
I would equate it
to a Honda Fit, maybe.
No, it's way bigger than that.
You think it's bigger than the Honda Fit?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll go with that. It's quite commodious. This rear seat legroom is good in the back. I sat in the rear seat just to see what it was like. It was all-wheel drive. I will tell you, it was well planted on the road, very solid. Not a rattle, not a squeak, not anything, and it was way over-engineered for our road driving capabilities, which I hope Jay will agree with, that we can't do much with these super performance cars on our roads. First of all, you got to 60 miles an hour in second gear, and it has 6 forward speeds.
And it was a stick, right?
And it was a stick, yes. And second and third are the gears that you might want to perform in a hilly, mountainous section or something like that, and they were great gears. But what do you do in 4, 5, and 6 besides
maybe get
some economy? But you can't do anything. And it doesn't matter whether this is a Mini Cooper or a Corvette or a Lamborghini or a Countach or whatever. We just can't drive cars anywhere probably in some of the world. I mean, Germany, Autobahn is probably where you can drive with unlimited speed. But in Britain, they've got more red light cameras and speed cameras than maybe the rest of the world does together.
Yeah.
And so what do you do with these performance cars other than enjoy them at 50 miles an hour all around our roads?
All right, so
Jay wants to say something. Go ahead.
But before you say something, my question is, who is this for? Is this for the Miata?
The four-door Countryman is for somebody who has kids in this family who owns this, has 2 children, and they're not at college age yet. And one of the children who wrote, the story I got was they flew in from Italy because they've been in Italy for 4 years, tough life, teaching in a school in Italy. And they hadn't owned any American cars since they had gone off to Italy and sold everything. So they had to order 2 cars. The same family whose Navigator I tested is the same family whose Mini Cooper, J.C. Cooper Works I tested.
So they've got both.
So
they've got a Navigator and a Mini.
Yes.
So what I find kind of exclusive, and it is, well, we know the Mini is a niche car, but there are not many little SUV crossover all-wheel drive cars that you can get with a stick these days.
That's true.
I'm trying to think of one, and I can't.
You can't.
I'm not sure I can. I agree with you.
So back to the question, what do you do with that? Well, it's called spirited driving. You can have fun, row through the gears.
You could row through these gears very nicely. It was precise shifting. I didn't miss a shift. It reminded me of my original Mini Cooper, which Also, was it six back then, or was it a five? I guess it was a 2003 that I had, but it was a two-door, the basic replacement for the Mini Cooper of original era back in the last century. And but this was a very nice driving car. It actually, they had considered buying the BMW X1. Is that the same chassis? I think that this
it is the same chassis, but you cannot get the X1 with
a standard. I didn't know that part, but I said you were right to get this one instead of the X1. He asked me what I thought. I said, well, I hadn't driven the X1 and I didn't know a lot about it, but I think you really made the right choice.
Did they get it here?
Oh yeah, they ordered it here and it was delivered to them.
I remember Sally Spillane trying to get a standard Isuzu, and way back in the day, and she, you know, there was, it's like, nope, you drive standard, you have to. And
actually,
we had a similar one, worse standards. I understand.
They were available.
Right, they were, and that's why she. This one wanted one, and we have Margaret Roach, who all she has wanted, you know, when she had to give up her Saab, all she wanted was a standard station wagon.
Is the Impreza Subaru no longer the the Goes Like Hell version?
The WRX.
I think that comes as a standard.
Actually, in the Subaru line, you can still get a Crosstrek. The new Crosstrek with a stick. You will not be able to get a Forester with a stick anymore. You can't get an Outback with a stick anymore. Right. But you can get a Crosstrek. I'm not sure about the other models. In the Mazda line, you can get CX-3s and CX-5s, but only in front drive.
Miata is...
The MX-5.
Yeah.
You don't want to see a Miata with an automatic.
No, you really don't. But
once in a while you do.
And so you get a Mustang and a Camaro with sticks also.
So another question apropos. In the same way that when vinyl went out, you know, no one was ever going to listen to a record again. And of course, slowly, people are, you know, some people never dumped their vinyl and some people are rediscovering it. Are people rediscovering?
I don't think they're rediscovering.
I know the ones who already know it, but is there a younger group that is discovering the fun of driving a car that isn't
self-autonomous? I suspect those few people who are buying WRXs are. And maybe, I don't know whether they're buying, the young crowd is buying Mini Coopers, but some of them are buying WRXs, I think. And Jay, you can chime in.
I don't think a lot of young people are buying sticks. I don't know of many young people who've ever driven a stick.
I mean, we're gonna sound
like old farts again and complain about the days gone. But if you look at the people who drive sticks, they're our contemporaries.
So the long short is, it has not, a new group has not yet discovered the joys of stick shift driving school.
Well, first of all, unless you know enough about sticks, if you go out looking and you're a new grouper and you go out looking at cars, good luck finding any dealership that's got a car with a stick on the lot.
Right.
So that you don't even have the option of bumping into it, most likely. You have to know what a stick is all about and want to buy and then go find one. But I don't think there's stocking cars with stick shifts at all. Maybe the Mini Cooper dealers are up to a degree, but you know what? They're coming with six-speed automatics. And
the reality is all the cars that have both sticks, or the cars that still have sticks, like the BMWs, Porsches, the automatic versions are
faster,
better performing, usually have now more gears than the standards. A lot of these automatics have 7, 8, 9 gears, whereas a stick is
limited to six.
There are a couple sevens, like the Corvette has 7 gears, but basically they're 6 speeds. And the performance is lesser than an automatic.
Well, the technology in the automatics and the computer programs, they shift faster than you can shift a manual transmission car. And if it's still, I go back to the beginning statement of this Cooper Works. I don't know where you can really drive any of these performance versions of these cars with any really great happiness and joy. Maybe out west somewhere in the mountains and off the main highways and that kind of thing. But and maybe up in Vermont you might be able to do it too. But the speed limits are all 55 miles an hour off the interstates or less in general in most roads. And you just don't know when you're going to have a trooper coming the other way. And if you're trying to drive in a spirited fashion, you run the risk of bumping into one in the wrong place when you don't think you're going to see one ever.
It used to be a spirited debate. Now it's a spirited drive.
But just to finalize the Cooper thing, it is a wonderful car. It's solid. It's very flexible for usage because it's got a luggage compartment behind the rear set of seats, and the rear set of seats has legroom for the rear set of passengers, and the front seats are very, very comfortable. And it's for the new era where Mini is too Mini in its original two-door form, and this is what they had to do to try to keep an interest up in a brand that was stuck with one model back in 2002 when they first redesigned it.
Adding to the fact that the people who owned this particular car also had a Navigator, and it's
correct.
Important to, you know, if you've got a family, et cetera,
you do need more than the two-door Cooper for your second car if you've got a family with children, that's for sure.
So to go on and talk about what do we do with cars that are supposed to be fun, well, I think we collect them, we drive them on track. You go to car shows, and I want to talk a little bit about the car show yesterday in Falls Village.
Car show?
It was pretty amazing. I got there on the tail end of things, but
have you been before?
I had not, and apparently it was like the biggest.
This
show
is the biggest.
It has been growing every year, and I can't say it with experience because I have never gotten to one.
Really? No. Well, the funny thing is, this started as a benefit, and I'll tell you, it has evolved without marketing or anything, and it's just
1,175 cars. Is that what?
750 cars.
750 cars.
Yep.
Wow.
It was impressive. I thought it was fun. I saw the cars going there. I was on the road in the morning, and I crossed a bunch of cars going there. And then said, okay, I'll swing by in the afternoon. And it was fun, and it was a big party. I mean, the whole downtown
and
Falls Village was...
It's a genuine, because no one marketed it or tried to turn it. It's a car show.
It's a car
that
show.
It's just terrific. Yeah, and it is growing because people...
Word of mouth.
It's a grassroots thing.
And people are discovering, it's like, oh, wow, this...
And, of course,
feels
you
like,
had perfect weather for it. What better than
weekend? They have some sort of arrangement with the weather gods, I will say this, because there's only been one. I think this was the 7th or 8th. But there's only been one that had slightly dubious weather, and even then the sun came out at about noon.
But it's a great event to remember for next year. For people out there, it's obviously free. Just go there, park on the side of the road, and just walk through town. There are a few vendors. I think you were able to get some food and drinks. And,
yep. And it benefits the volunteer fire department. Falls
and there are cars that are for sale, too. People want to sell some of their cars.
Yeah.
And this is not a new car show.
No. A lot of American muscle cars. A few Pontiac GTOs. I'm not 100% sure they were all original and all
authentic,
but one of them that I saw seemed to be
pretty
authentic.
Close.
Yes, and those are cars that are worth a lot of
pretty
money.
Penny. Yeah.
And Robin can relate to this. There was a Bricklin there.
One Bricklin, and I know that Bricklin. I talked to the owner, so I can assure you it was not mine. Mine would be a garage find, and I don't know whether you can find it in my garage currently when you look first, because it's hard to see under a lot of stuff that's in the garage on top of it. That is a restored Bricklin, 1975, as opposed to mine, which is a 74. They only made, I think, 3,400 and change numbers or something before the company went bankrupt due to warranty problems was one of the big issues. And mine was number 333 off the assembly line. And they were all in so-called safety colors. It was a Gullwing sports car two-door gullwing vehicle designed to be, it was touted as a safety vehicle, and it had a very rigid or strong, completely steel cage skeleton underneath the plastic, which is where the problems all were. And
do you know what number this one that you saw was?
No, but it was 75, and they changed engines between 74 and 75. In 74, they were all AMC four barrel 360 V8s, and then they switched to Ford 351 or 52.
This one had barrel, a 350, 352
or 1 or 2 barrel.
The reason I'm curious is because is it a lot or a little that there are two Bricklands in a small ish area?
It is a lot. I think the last one, Paul Licka, who used to own a big property in Sharon, was a third Bricklin owner.
Okay.
And I believe his estate may have sold it. I'm not sure where it went, but he's no longer with us. And we had a lot of talks about it when we were both live Bricklin owners.
So I guess the question is does that seem, I just, in terms of a cluster, is that a fair number for a small
area?
Well,
it's only 3,400 and change, where I do not know how many are actively alive in the country today, but certainly not 3,400 of them. I don't see very many in any of these car auctions that are on. I can't recall seeing one in Barrett Jackson, and some of these other car shows that have been recently on TV. So I don't know where they are, if they are running. Parts are still available. When car companies go bankrupt, there are usually lots of components, parts still left in storage somewhere, and they all get bought up by resellers that are going to be around for far longer than the cars were around for, so that people can get parts.
And that's the case Bricklands with DeLorean, for instance.
Yeah, the DeLorean is another car that had a short shelf life, so to speak. And,
another gullwing car with a short shelf life.
But it wasn't. It didn't have the same skeletal skin problems that the Bricklin did. The Bricklin really failed on the strength of the fact that they didn't do their chemistry with the plastics right, and when they laid the plastic over the steel frames, they did not understand that when it got cold out, that plastic could shrink, and it would shrink around the metal frames and flare up and crack and do all sorts of bad things, which ultimately, I think, sank the company.
Gee, sounds like a household accident I had the other day.
You know? What was that?
It's just like, wow.
Vacuum
cleaner?
Oh,
yeah, I should have thought of that. We've got about 6 minutes left. Do you want to talk about tires?
Or? No,
Jay's got a lot to talk about.
Well, a couple of things. It's summer. We spend a lot. I have been spending a lot of time on the roads. And yes, during the summer, you know, you see a lot of old cars. You see people just tooling around the countryside. Well, you see on the highways. You see a lot of RVs. You have to be careful on the roads out there.
A lot of convertibles.
I was on the Mass Pike, and I can voice my frustrations over and over. It doesn't serve much of a purpose, I guess. But what I did want to mention is bicycles on the road. Oh. And
in single file?
That's Jill's favorite topic.
I know it. I
know they're dualies. They're going side by side in Westport.
That's what I mean.
We've got very narrow roads down off the main drag into the local areas in the Westport, Sakonnet area, where lots of biking, and you have people out running on the roads in the early morning and walking with dogs. You really have essentially between, I will say, 3/4 and 1 lane's worth of passable area from early in the morning and a nice morning when they're all out exercising to maybe all day with bicyclists.
So guess what, guys?
What?
Get a grip on it. It's okay.
Yeah, it is okay. It's fine.
It's they can, you know, we sometimes as motorists think that they are hogging the road, and some of them do. As motorists, we don't understand what it is to be riding a bicycle. And I haven't ridden much in the last few years. As a kid, I rode a lot. I grew up in Europe. Bikes were all over the place. I think there's a better understanding, I think, on the other side of the pond on how to share the road with cyclists. And the road is are better designed for that.
All right. No, my complaint is not sharing the road. And, you know, whatever you do, there's always a, like, for example, fly fishermen and kayakers, there's always something that is interfering with the even tenor of that particular. My complaint about the bicyclists is the, in both cases, the lack of awareness on from motorists and cyclists about sharing the road. I don't have an issue with sharing the road. I have an issue huge with the way the road is shared.
Well, and you know, I actually did a little reading on that this morning, trying to prepare a little bit. There are laws, both for cyclists and motorists, and I think we need to learn the laws and it's not just the laws, it's just, you know,
common sense, basically. Yeah.
There's a lot of common sense that we have to come to grip with. You know, there's a 3-foot law in, I think, about 20 states, and Connecticut is one of them. New York and Massachusetts are not, but they have laws of that stipulate that when you're overtaking a bicycle, you have to give them a reasonable amount of space.
Which means swerving. And on the narrow roads, to our point, you really have to focus on that fact, because if you have to give, it's like the sign that says pull over away from safety vehicles that are on the side of the road with their lights flashing, tow trucks, state police, highway workers, and that kind of thing. On a 4-lane highway each way or 3-lane highway each way, it's pretty
very easy to
you've
do.
You've got 2 lanes. To move over to, but
on a winding
White Hollow road
you cannot see what's coming.
A 2-lane country road, you can't see all that way, especially on corners when you come upon bicycles going the same way, blind corners.
It can be difficult.
It can
and
be
I
difficult.
I think of you know the turn if you're coming from, for those of us who are local, Salisbury and Lakeville. If you're coming from Salisbury and going to Lakeville, there's that one turn. Where if you're riding a bike or if you're driving a car and going around a bike in that turn, there is a blind spot.
Yes.
And it's difficult. I think as a biker, you try to be aware that cars are coming behind you and you stick to the right.
However, bicyclists have very narrow tires, and they are very prone to hitting stones. And the people
and the sides of the road are just in
covered
very
in
stony
stones.
And sticky.
Stony. Stones.
Yep.
And the laws actually say now that bicyclists don't have to be sticking to the absolute right of the road. They can use their best judgment to.
Which means we as drivers have to be even more alert to that kind of situation.
Absolutely.
And I don't know that many drivers know that, and I'm not sure many bicyclists know the counterpart to that.
Right.
And so
I'm not advocating getting one or the other off the road. I'm trying
I understand,
to do coexistence.
Coexistence is going to be a challenge for many of us for some time to come because of the way things have evolved.
So when I overpass a cyclist, I always go over the center line. And you know, and I was thinking, well, is this even legal or not? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't really care because that is the right thing to do. Give them as much room as possible. But just so we know,
out of blind corner,
actually,
you can't do it.
It is legal. Well, in the blind corner, it's a problem.
You need to slow down and probably follow the cyclist around the
and
corner.
That's more important to say. We're going to run out of time, but that's more important to say only because the issue is, you know, sure, your impulse should be to give them plenty of space. Yeah. When there's another car flying at you that you can't
you'd
see,
better brake hard and stay in your lane. And the final thing I think that cyclists need to do is make sure they've got really good LED lighting flashing
absolutely.
In the back and even in the front, especially in the dusk, but even in bright daylight.
Where the trees,
because
where
the trees,
where
the
trees
shade.
Are, mm-hmm. colored clothing blends right in and you can't see and we are distracted many times at
the
same time.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.